Welcome to Real Talk with your host, Brad Maskey, where he talks all things real estate.
Good morning, California comrades. This is Brad Maskey, and you are listening to Real Talk, or the COVID Diaries, as we are learning to call it, as we enter day 264 of the temporary lockdown to bend the curve, to kind of just make sure the hospitals can catch up. And as we hit day 264, as I said 3 weeks ago, Tulare County and now apparently the entire state are about to go back into deep purple COVID lockdowns. That's right. What does deep purple COVID lockdowns mean? It means that all businesses will be closed again, that retail stores will be allowed 20% of their normal capacity, that you will not be able to play outside. Your children can't go to playgrounds. You can't go to gyms. You can't get your hair cut. You cannot eat outside or inside. You are to lock down, shelter in place, and stay there until at least Christmas, if not longer. In fact, King Newsom has declared that this may last for another month or two before we're let off of our temporary lockdowns. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, King Newsom declares. He says that light at the end of the tunnel is a vaccine that will be available next spring. They aren't sure who will get the vaccine first in California or how it will be distributed, but we know that once that vaccine is out, the governor will still be reluctant to let go of his lockdown powers, which he has used and loved having the power to do. You see, I say there is absolutely no science behind the lockdowns. There's no science that we know of behind why you could shop at Walmart, why you could shop at Costco, why you could shop at Home Depot, why you could shop at Winco, but you can't go to your local stores, why you can eat with your family at home and you won't get sick, but if you eat with your family in public, you will get sick. There is no science, and certainly there's no science that's been shown to us why this works. And the CDC, in yet another of their changes of heart, has decided this week, too, that we must wear masks all the time. We should wear them even when we're in our houses. We should wear a mask when we're in our cars. We should wear a mask when we're in our bars. We should wear a mask when we go to Mars. That's right, wearing masks is now deemed to be the proper thing to do to show that you care about stopping the spread of COVID. And of course, who would have thought that a virus like the flu would have a season like the flu and that it would increase in the winter months? Who would have ever thought that that would be possible? But no, according to Governor Newsom and his scientists, it has nothing to do with the winter, with us being in enclosed areas. It has to do with the fact that we're actually going out and seeing each other, that we're shopping, that we're working, that we're doing things. And the way to stop that is to lock us down into an enclosed area where we're with our own families. Now, does staying in an enclosed area only with your family and just a few people work? Well, there's been some science on that, and there's been some tests to test that. In fact, this summer, some Marines, 3,000 to be exact, decided that they would do a test of mask wearing and just staying isolated from everyone else. So they took 3,000 Marines, they tested them to make sure no one was COVID positive, and they had them work together on a college campus for 2 weeks. During that 2 weeks, they weren't allowed to use computers, touch things that each other would touch. They were tested every day for COVID for temperature. They were washing their hands. They were wearing masks all the time. They only took off their masks to eat. And guess what? Did any of those Marines get infected with COVID? Yes, they did. 60 of them got infected with COVID, even though they were following all the protocols. Because you know what? Viruses are viruses, and they are very, very difficult to stop. And I will end my discussion about masks and about the COVID virus, although that's what's on everyone's mind as we go into this winter, is what are we going to do? How many small businesses will survive with another lockdown? I, for one, am going to be sure to get a haircut today, because back in March, I missed an appointment for a haircut and went months before I had to find somebody to cut my hair in a garage with a secret password to get there so I could get my hair cut. But on the last thing about wearing masks, let me tell you what's on the WHO's website, the WHO and the CDC, who are now telling us to wear masks. Here's what it says after 16 pages of discussion about mask wearing. At the present time, the widespread use of masks by healthy people in the community setting is not yet supported by high-quality or direct scientific evidence, and there are potential benefits and harms to consider in wearing masks. In other words, as they tell us, we must wear masks. Again, it's a political statement. It's showing that you care. It doesn't necessarily stop the spread. So the new deep purple tier of COVID has been caused by a recent increase in hospitalizations and a concern that the hospitals will become overwhelmed. In Tulare County, we're told we have 65 ICU beds, and of those 65, 21 are available, but we're ranked in with a region, and if this entire region gets below 15% availability of ICU beds, we all go into a lockdown for 3 weeks. It's predicted that by the end of this weekend, if not Monday, that because of the way they've drawn up the San Joaquin Valley region, that we will hit that capacity level and we will all be locked down again for another 3 weeks. We wonder how many businesses will fight that lockdown. How many restaurants who spent all kinds of money to get heaters and to get outside dining, to get set up so that they could survive through the winter, will say we're just going to voluntarily lock down for 3 weeks. We're already seeing sporadic cases where restaurants are saying, no, I'm going to stay open, where businesses are saying, I'm staying open no matter what, I don't care what you do, and where the public is saying, I will take the risk. It's up to me to decide what exposure level I want. Remember that this disease kills mostly the elderly. In fact, the numbers in Tulare County, where I live, show that it is almost all the elderly who are dying. And I've run the numbers and kind of done a risk analysis for Tulare County based on how many people were tested so far that tested positive and how many of those people died. In Tulare County, to date, nobody under 25 has died from COVID, despite the fact that there have been over 6,000 people who have tested positive with COVID. There have been zero deaths. Under the age of 40, though, that 26 to 40-year-old age group, there have been 4 deaths in that age group. Now, those 4 deaths, based on the number of people who tested positive, which was 5,987, is not even 0.1% of the people who tested positive. So that means that if you're 40 and under, if you're 25 and under, you probably have 0% chance. If you're 40 and under and you get the disease, you have less than 0.1% of chance of dying in Tulare County. And then we move to our next age group, which is 64, that 41 to 64. And in that age group, there were 64 deaths. That represents 0.1% of the positive test that died. So you have a 99.9% likelihood of surviving COVID if you're 64 and under and live in Tulare County with our current state of treatment and medical care. I know these numbers bore people, but it is what you need to look at when you're talking about the risk of a virus that everyone is probably eventually going to get. And then you have that final category where you're most at risk, and that is those 65 and over. And of course, that's where we have the most deaths. 65 and over in Tulare County, we have 235 deaths, which represents 11% of the people who tested positive in 65 and older. They died with COVID in Tulare County. So it tells us, just like everything else in life, that the older you are, the more likely you are to die from a disease or from something else. Another interesting thing that happened this week was Johns Hopkins put out a study a week ago where they studied the death rate in the United States. And in studying the death rate, they found that those who are 65 and older are not dying in any greater numbers than they were before COVID. Even though we have 265,000 deaths, or whatever the number is today, maybe it's 270,000 now, that of the people who are 65 and older, who are the most likely to die, that their death rate is no higher than it was pre-COVID. meaning that those people who were 65 and older were the ones most likely to die from heart disease, from cancer, from all other things. And as I said last week or 2 weeks ago, we looked at the numbers for the state of California, and we found that in California it's the same thing, that it appears as if people dying of heart disease and cancer are 20 or 30,000 short this year, but on the other side of the coin, we have 18 to 20,000 that have died of COVID in that same age range. So it may just be a wash. Now, let me tell you that after John Hopkins did that study, put it on the front page of their webpage, it was pulled down later last week and they were forced to remove it. When you try to find it, it's gone. I had to go back to the Wayback Machine to pull it to take a look at it. And so I pulled it on the Wayback Machine, and as I posted it to my Facebook, I got an immediate warning from Facebook that I was posting false data and did I want to continue to post it that it had been proven fake. And I said, yeah, I do want to post it because they give real numbers. They show the number of deaths. These are real studies, real people. And I don't think that that's fake numbers when you present real numbers that show who's died, why they died, and what they died of. So I posted it, and of course on Facebook it's blocked. When I go to the fact checkers to find out why they say it's not true, they say that the numbers from the CDC are incorrect and that it's an incomplete picture of the data that the COVID kills, and that's the facts. So don't fight it, Jack. Anyway, the COVID Diaries continues. This is Brad Maskey. You're listening to Real Talk, and when we come back, we are going to talk real estate. We're going to talk about Proposition 19, which has now been certified to have passed, and what it means for you and your real estate, what it means about moving, what it means about your children inheriting your property when you die. When we come back from this short break, we'll talk again about real estate on Real Talk. What a novel idea. And I'll tell you what Proposition 19 means to you. We'll also talk about when it takes effect, and we'll talk about some of the other issues going on with real estate in this COVID market and whether we'll be able to sell real estate for the 3 weeks during the lockdown. I'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Real Talk with your host, Brad Maskey. If you have questions for Brad, send an email to realtalkbrad@gmail.com.
And welcome back. This is Brad Maskey, and you are listening to Real Talk. Remember, you can reach me at 559-732-4444 if you have questions. And with your permission, sometimes we might record those questions and play them on our weekly podcast. Again, someday soon, I would like to be on the radio, but while we're in deep purple, it looks like I'm not going to be getting back to the studio anytime soon. I also have a new website. It's realtalkbrad.com. If you go to realtalkbrad.com, you can find all the podcasts and some of the older podcasts from KMJ. So I told you I was going to talk about Proposition 19, which now that the election has been certified for California, is a proposition that definitely has passed. This was the Realtor, California Association of Realtors sponsored proposition, had been on the ballot 2 years ago and failed. So they added some sweeteners to this proposition, which I did not like at all, but they think that's the reason that it did pass. And I don't like those sweeteners because they raised property taxes. They did not lower them. Yeah, so what Proposition 19 is basically about is about the ability of folks 55 or older or those who are severely disabled or those who have lost their property due to natural disasters such as a wildfire, being able to buy a replacement property anywhere in the state now and move their Proposition 13 tax base with them when they go to that new property. So previously, Proposition 90 was about moving your tax base. And this Proposition 90 said that if you moved within your own county or you moved into a county that accepted your moving into it, you could take your Proposition 13 tax base after selling your principal residence and moving. So if I lived in Tulare County and I sold a house for $300,000, I could buy another house in Tulare County for $200,000. And if my Prop 13 tax base on the $300,000 house was $50,000, I would move that basis with me. Now, that was the previous law, and that was for 55 and older, and there were some counties that accepted moving that tax base. California Association of Realtors said that this law was freezing properties in high-cost areas, that people would not sell their property and move somewhere else. And by the way, under the old law, you had to buy equal or lesser to move your tax base. If you bought a more expensive home, it would go up. Anyway, CIR's theory was we would get more inventory if you could freely move anywhere in the state and take your tax basis with you. Okay, and my argument for them was you're getting no more inventory. If you sell a house and you buy a house, that's zero inventory. That's churning, just like the stock market. I got you to sell one stock and buy another stock. How many stocks did I create? Sell one house, buy another house. How many new houses did I create? And the answer is none. You churned it, but the realtors made money. So I wasn't against being able to do that, being able to sell your house and move and take your basis with you when you move. I was all in favor of that. That was our original proposition that was on the ballot and failed in 2018. But to add some sweetener so that they could get it passed this time, which they did, they added a couple of things. They added the provision that if you lost your house from a natural disaster, like a fire, you could move anywhere in the state and rebuild. In the past, you could rebuild in your own county, but you couldn't necessarily move out of the county and move somewhere else in the state and buy another house to do it. So now you can freely move anywhere. They also said that the excess taxes collected will partially go to fighting fires and fire prevention, so they could get Cal Fire to help support passing this proposition or say that they were for it. You can also do this now up to three times. In the past, you could only move once, or if your house burned down, you could only buy a new house one time. Imagine if you lose your house to a fire three times. I think it's highly unlikely, or else you're building in the wrong place, or else maybe there's an arsonist in your family. But in any case, under the new Proposition 19 that did pass, you can now buy anywhere in the state and move your tax basis with you, your property tax basis. You can also buy up under this new law. So if I sold my house in Tulare County for $300,000, moved to Los Angeles County and bought a $500,000 home, I could take my tax basis from Tulare County and the difference between what I sold my house for and the new purchase price and move. So let's say my basis in Tulare County is $50,000, my tax property tax basis, sell the house for $200,000, buy a $500,000 home in Los Angeles County. I move my $50,000 tax basis with me. That's the beginning basis. And then the difference between the $200,000 and the $500,000 gets added to it. The basis for my new home in LA is $350,000, not $500,000. So there is some tax savings. So again, I don't have a problem with being able to move county to county and doing that. But what they took away was they took away the ability to pass property from one generation to another. That's right. Right now, under Proposition 58, if you inherit a property from your parents, or if your parents are dead and you inherit a property from your grandparents, that's skipping a generation, you can get their Proposition 13 tax base. So if my family had a farm and I inherited that farm when they died, I would get their tax basis. And if they had it in the family for 40 or 50 years, that could be a fairly low property tax basis. But what they did is they said only, now with Proposition 19, the only time you can transfer the tax basis to your heirs on your death is if they own or occupy the property. So now it has to be an owner-occupied house that I move into to owner-occupy to get that tax base. It won't work for commercial property. It won't work for apartment buildings. It won't work for farms. They will be brought up to their new market value when it's given to you after, even after death, if you inherit it. And this creates a problem for a lot of people. I know some people that have commercial property that's been in the family for over 40 years. And let's say that this commercial property has a value today of $5 million, but for the family, the value is well under $1 million. That's all they have invested in it. They've owned it for so long. So right now, their property taxes are $10,000 a year or less on the property. But when they die and their children inherit this piece of commercial property, the new property taxes will be $50,000 or $60,000 a year. Now this property, this asset that's supposedly worth $5 million, only produces net income right now of about $40,000 or $50,000 a year. So when the new tax basis hits it, it will be an unprofitable property to own. You'll be losing money owning your own real estate, and the children will be forced to sell the property. This can be true of a lot of farms and other properties as well, which is why I was against it. So here's what you need to be considering. This law about transferring to children takes effect on February 16th. The rest of the proposition takes effect on April 1st of 2021. But February 16th of 2021 is when the portion of the law that applies to passing things on to your children takes effect. So if you have property that you think your children are not going to live in, but you want to get it to your children now so that they can get the current property tax basis on the property, you should be talking to your accountant and seeing if you can gift it to them or how you could structure something to give this to your children now, even sell it to them now, so that they get that Prop 13 tax basis. The reason I say you have to talk to your accountant is because when you inherit property when you die, you get it at a stepped up or current market value. So in the instance of that commercial property where the basis in the property is $1 million or less and the property tax basis is $1 million or less, when the parents die and the children inherit the property, they inherit it at its market value of $5 million, even though their property tax wouldn't have stepped up. That's the value the IRS would put on it. So if they sold it for $5 million after they inherited it with a value of $5 million, they would have no gain. But if their parents decided to transfer it to them now before they died, when they transfer it to them now, they get it at their parents' basis in the property, the $1 million. So if they then decided to sell it 3 or 4 years from now for $5 million, they would have a $4 million taxable gain, long-term capital gains, but it could create as much as $1 million in tax liability. And that's why they need to talk to their accountants about whether it makes sense to deed that property to the child now, or whether they should wait until they die. And again, these are complex issues. I've had more than 20 phone calls on this in the last 30 days where people are trying to decide what to do with their property as part of estate planning. Again, I'm not an estate attorney. I'm a real estate broker, and I've been telling them that they need to be certain that they talk to their accountant before they do anything. But February 16th is the drop dead date. If you haven't transferred it by then, when you do transfer it, if it's not going to be owner occupied, then the tax basis does not go with it. And there's one more caveat on these houses. It was to stop the very expensive homes from being transferred with this. If the property is worth more than $1 million, you get the basis plus the difference that's over $1 million. So a $3 million property that had a $100,000 tax basis, if you inherited it and moved into the house, your tax basis would be $100,000 for property taxes plus $2 million for the difference over the million, or $2.1 million would be your new property tax basis. So again, I know that's a long explanation about that proposition, but there are people who have been calling and asking me what it means. It means 55 and older or permanently disabled or lost your house in a fire, you can sell and buy anywhere in the state and move your Prop 13 tax basis with you. It takes effect April 1st. We don't know if you sell your house now and then buy after April 1st whether you can move it or not, because the legislation is not clear. Even though California Association of Realtors wrote it, you may have to wait till after April 1st to sell it to do that. I'm Brad Maskey. You've been listening to Real Talk. I'm going to take another short break, and then I'll be right back. Thanks for listening. I'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Real Talk with your host, Brad Maskey. If you have questions for Brad, send an email to realtalkbrad@gmail.com.
Welcome back, California comrades. Again, we're in day 264 of the temporary COVID lockdown. We're in a presidential election year in a 2020 that'll be remembered by all of us who lived through it like no other year in our lives. We also are in a presidential election year in which there's still no firm outcome of the election. Now, the pundits are telling us that President Trump definitely lost the election. Nothing to see here. Everyone just move right along. Don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain. Don't pay attention to any of the cheating. And maybe it'll turn out that that's what happens. But when you take a look at this election, this also has been an election like no other. Or else this has been an election like what's been going on forever and we just didn't notice it. But it certainly appears as if there's lots of cheating going on. Will it be provable in the short period of time between an election and when it has to be certified and when it actually goes to the Electoral College? Who knows? And there's all kinds of claims out there and things going on. But here's the things we know for sure. Here's the things that we have seen. So we watched a camera on a room where they're counting votes, and there's observers watching them count the votes. In this room, they then ask all the observers, newspaper, and everyone else to leave, and they tell them that we're through counting votes for the night. We're just going to stay and clean up. There's nothing here for you to see. After everyone leaves, they start bringing out more votes, and for the next hour or two, they continue to tabulate and count votes. Okay, this is what the facts are. We know that it happened. We saw it. And what are we told happened during that 1 to 2 hours? We're told by the Secretary of State from Georgia, nothing happened there. We've investigated it. They just did what they normally do. They counted some votes. The only reason no one was there was not because they were asked to go home. Everyone just chose to go home and not watch them count any more votes. They just felt it was time. It was almost 11 o'clock. Time to go home after 10, go to bed. No one wants to watch you count votes anyway. That's what we're told. We're supposed to believe. Nothing to see here. Move right along. We're told by Democrats who were watching the election counting that when they were doing the recount of the votes, that they saw something very unusual in absentee ballots. Absentee ballots are ballots that are mailed in. They've been folded, put in an envelope, mailed in, and then opened. And they said they saw thousands of ballots that were absentee ballots that were not folded. They weren't bent. They were absolutely flat pieces of paper. And to make it even more unusual, these thousands of ballots that they saw in this particular swing state had only one candidate marked on the entire ballot, and that was Biden for president. No down votes, nothing else marked on it. And that the mark for it was not like you would make with a pen, but as if it were Xeroxed onto the ballot. And in the recount, they saw thousands of those ballots go through. Nothing to see here. Move right along. Computer experts who look at these swing states in which Biden has apparently won after Trump was ahead by thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of votes, have said the most unusual things happened in the middle of the night. The clumps of votes were tallied that come in numbers like 2,000, 2,500 for Biden. In one instance, there were almost 20,000 votes at once that came in all for Biden, but none for Trump. And they said that when votes are tallied and come through a natural process, that never happens. It just doesn't. There's no way that everybody in that particular batch of ballots voted for one person. The odds are 1 in 50 million. These are the arguments that are being put before the courts. The courts are regularly kicking them out and say, no, there's nothing to see here. We know that they accepted ballots after the fact. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of affidavits from people who were watching the polls that said they were so far away they couldn't watch and see what happened. We know that they mailed out more ballots than they had registered voters. We know that there were extra ballots printed. We know all of those things. And yet everyone says you can't prove the election was stolen. There's nothing to see here. Move right along. But there's 73 million Americans who are saying, I don't want to move right along. I don't see this as a fair election. I see that something might have happened that was cheating. We're told to shut up and accept it. They accepted the fact that Trump got elected without complaining, which is a lie, and that if you think that Trump got reelected and Biden cheated, you did not. shut up, and move right along. I think that no matter what happens, this is going to be an election like no other, because I think there's 73 million people who, unlike the Russian collusion hoax, think that there has definitely been ballot changing going on. And the state with the most of that ballot changing is Georgia. Georgia has most of the ballot changing. We have two senators who are up for election in a state where we know, even though it's controlled by Republicans, that it appears as if there was massive chicanery going on, where there were lots of things happening behind the curtain that should not have happened, and where those are likely to happen again, most particularly in the Atlanta, Georgia area where this happened. So this is going to be another wild year. 2021 may not let us escape the COVID diary and those losses. So I said I would talk about real estate when I came back, but I've got to tell you that who is president and the policies of the president do affect your real estate. And I'll give you a case, for example, and that is the Waters of the U.S. Act, the WOTUS Act, which said that any water anywhere can be controlled by the federal government and the Army Corps of Engineers. If you have a puddle on your property, that falls under the WOTUS Act. This was under a prior administration, Obama rules, about what you could and couldn't do and what you had to get permits for. So there's this one property owner in Alaska who needed to expand their pipe building business. And to expand their pipe building business, they bought a vacant lot between two other industrial properties on a road right by where they were building their pipes. When they got ready to get their building permit, lo and behold, even though this is on tundra, always frozen, always ice, never actual flowing water, that the Army Corps of Engineers claimed that it was a wetland and controlled by the Army Corps of Engineers, and because it was a wetland and protected, that they could not build their building between two other buildings on this frozen Arctic tundra. And herein lies why a difference in president makes a difference. Under the Trump administration, these rules have been rolled back and rolled back and rolled back, changed to be more realistic so that they don't have control over every mud puddle and every iceberg in the United States. And under the new ruling on these rules, last week, this man was able to get, after 4 years, a permit to expand his business on the industrial property that he had bought under the ruling that it's nowhere near any water, river, or streams, which is what this was all supposed to be about. And this is why who is president makes a big difference, because we know that rules and regulations can kill businesses. It can kill your real property rights, as we've seen in California, as they take more and more rights away from us. The other thing that we're seeing with the COVID is interest rates that are the lowest we have ever seen, and they continue to set records for how low they are. This week, again, the 30-year mortgage stayed below 3%, and in terms of what they called a Freddie Fannie rate for the 30-year mortgage, they say that the average was 2.7%. But that's not really the interest rate most people get, because the average close was closer to 3.25% than 2.7%. But the best borrowers, the ones with perfect credit and with the right down payment and with the right loan to value and with the right reserves, could get those 30-year mortgages under 3% on their property, which is just absolutely unheard of. I mean, it's just incredible. And what does that mean in terms of repayment? That means for every $100,000 you buy, your payment is $408 per year. Per month on a 30-year fixed mortgage. And so I could borrow $200,000 and have an $816 payment plus taxes plus insurance, but it'd still be about $1,100. And you know what? You can't rent very much in California for $1,100. It's also pretty darn hard to find those $200,000 houses, but they are out there. So when you take a look at interest rates, remember that the people with the best credit get the best interest rates, and the people with the most down payment income ratios, all of those things come into play, but there are some darn good interest rates out there, and if you're thinking of refinancing, be sure to shop around and find the best rate possible. This is Brad Maskey. You've been listening to Real Talk. I'm going to take another short break before I come back with my final segment on Classic Rock Real Talk. And remember, you can also reach me during the week, or anytime probably, at 559-732-4444 if you have questions about your real estate. I'll be right back after this break.
Welcome back to Real Talk with your host, Brad Maskey. If you have questions for Brad, send an email to realtalkbrad@gmail.com.
Welcome back, California comrades, to the final segment of Real Talk on December 5th, year of our Lord 2020. While we were on that short break, I got a flash across my computer that said that the region of the San Joaquin Valley has just been declared to be under 15% capacity for ICUs. We're at 14.2%, meaning that our local health officials have 48 hours to close the county back down. That's right, 48 hours to close down all of the county for another 3 weeks. Again, something I believe is totally unscientific. It certainly has not been open to discussion. Nobody got out and said, what are the rules? How will they work? Who makes these rules? Because Governor Newsom makes them in private. There's absolutely nothing open about how these rules are made. And we know this for a fact because we've talked about how children are not at risk from this, and yet they close down playgrounds and say children can't be on them. The city of Visalia goes so far as to take cement barricades and put them in the baseball fields to cover up home plate and to cover up the pitcher's mound to make certain that no one goes outside and plays baseball. Because, of course, we know that pesky little virus will get you there. And again, I've said a lot about this, but I think that this is absolutely insane. I think that locking people down, just like all the science shows, creates more cases of the virus than having them outside. I hope that the restaurants in Visalia have the guts to say, we're staying open outside, and we don't care, come lock us all down. Because if just one restaurant stays open, they're an easy target for everybody to come and get them. And of course, we've all seen the Rhode Island bar that did stay open and said, you can't close us down. They took his liquor license away. He stayed open. They've closed him down and barricaded his doors. He was open again yesterday, and thousands of people are protesting for him. And again, understand that for this particular bar that has stayed open, if you go less than a quarter of a mile away from him, on the same island, across the railroad tracks, every restaurant is open and everyone can eat there. But everyone knows the pesky little virus only goes to certain neighborhoods. Again, back to locking down these playgrounds. Children are not at risk from the disease. The schools that were supposed to open now in Tulare County will not be able to open. If you are already open, you can stay open, but they won't allow new schools to open during these lockdowns until Christmas. And in fact, Governor Newsom said that we probably won't see schools open in California this year or next year, and these children will miss a year and a half of their schooling. That's right, people who will be seniors in high school who won't get any of their memories, won't get to meet with their classmates, won't get any of those things. We have younger children who are learning absolutely nothing, and we know that these lockdowns and this lack of ability to go to school hurts the poorest the most. The ones who have parents who are working and not able to stay home with their 5 to 10 year olds to show them how to play on the internet. Yeah, play on the internet, because that's mostly what they do. They aren't learning from at home. 30% of the students have never checked in. They're not going to school at all. And you think this can't be bad for the country? All in the guise of a lockdown to protect you from a virus that you cannot stop from getting. We need to protect the elderly. We need to find treatments. We need to have medical care for people who are at risk. But locking down the healthy, quarantining healthy people because somebody else is sick has never been done in the history of the world before. It is not shown to work. It's not working. But again, that's what King Newsom is doing. Yeah, I know this was supposed to be the rant, and we're through at the rant portion of it, so we're back to talking about real estate and what's going on in our market. So this is what's going on in our market. If everything is closed down, can we still sell real estate for the next 3 weeks? Are we an essential industry able to show real estate? And the answer is, so far, there's been no guidance telling us that we can't do it. We can still continue to show and sell houses as long as we follow the COVID safety rules, which I've told you several times are no more than two people in the house at a time. Don't touch anything when you go into the house. Wash your hands before you go into the house. Wash your hands when you come out of the house. Wear a face mask at all times. Don't touch anything while you're in the house. After you've been in the house, we will go through the house and wipe down everything that you might have touched. We will air the house out. We will put blowers in to make sure that it's clear before we bring in the next two people to take a look at the same house. We will not ride in the car with you. We will meet you at the property, etc., etc., etc. But yes, we can still sell real estate. And yes, there still is an immense shortage of residential real estate on the market for sale throughout the San Joaquin Valley and all over the state. The one exception that we're seeing to this shortage of property is in the big cities in terms of rental properties. That's right. In cities like San Francisco, they're beginning to see vacancy factors of 10 and 15% because, again, the tech people are not moving back. They've moved out of the city. They've been given permission to telecommute, and they're saying, we do not want to live in that rat race. There is no reason for us to have to do that. Sacramento market has been greatly impacted by Bay Area people moving there because most of the Sacramento houses in that area are in full-sized lots with full-sized houses with room to grow and do things. And these people are tired of living in tiny apartments. And if you're going to be on continual lockdowns, it's always better to be out and to be about. So we're seeing the housing market change rapidly in terms of what people are looking for. Rural properties that wouldn't sell 2 years ago are now becoming in high demand because if you don't have to commute to work, if you can stay home, people are saying, I want a home that I want to stay in. If I can't go out to eat, if I can't do any of those things, I want a place that I feel comfortable in. And speaking of going out to eat, I went out to eat last night. I'm going to go out to eat tonight. I'm going to support the restaurants to the very best of my ability because the only kind of food service you're going to get in the San Joaquin Valley sometime in the next 2 days is you will be able to get takeout orders only, to-go orders only, or delivered food only. Now, this is not a model that will work for most restaurants. It can work for fast food restaurants. It can work for a Jack in the Box. But in downtown Visalia, we have 28 independently owned restaurants, all of whom are suffering, all of whom may fail. And that's what's given us such a beautiful downtown in Visalia, has been all of our independent restaurants, all of the things to do, people out in the streets. And this is now going to be a dark downtown. That's right. Joe Biden said it's going to be a dark winter. Fauci said it's going to be a dark winter. And what's making it a dark winter is them choosing to shut us down and lock us down. That's right. That's what's making it a dark winter. Again, we should be allowed to take the risks we're willing to take. Restaurants that are doing COVID-safe things, that are opening them up so that there's airflow, so that you're not trapped in there, should be allowed to continue to do that. And the people who go out know what their risk level is. This is supposed to be a free country. I'm sorry, but we're not supposed to live in fiefdoms where people can make up the rules as they go. And Fauci is one of the biggest hypocrites of them all. Fauci is the one that first said, don't wear masks. They provide no protection for you, just like every single study has ever shown. And now it's wear a mask everywhere. Lock down. Lockdowns don't work, but let's lock down anyway, because we're going to bend the curve again. And I do acknowledge our hospitals are getting full. I do acknowledge that there's lots of people who are testing positive for COVID. I do acknowledge that some people who get COVID are going to die. But they're not all going to die, and some of the ones who died were going to die anywhere. And I'll finish with a story. A friend of mine whose father has been very ill for the last 2 years, been in and out of ICU, and almost died twice earlier this year, pre-COVID. Her father died last week from COVID. Her Facebook post about her father was, COVID is real. COVID kills. How sad it is that her father did not get to live to have Christmas and to spend his 40th anniversary with his wife in December, but he was killed by COVID in ICU and died. Now, I feel sorry for the loss. I feel sorry that he didn't make it to Christmas, but I do not believe that COVID is what killed him. His comorbidities are what killed him. His comorbidities in that he was in ICU twice earlier this year, and she was asking us to pray for her father that he would live and not die while he was in ICU from other things and not COVID. So yes, he died with COVID, but he didn't die from COVID. And you have to ask yourself, out of those 270,000 people that died with COVID, how many died from COVID? And it's not all of them. And I know there's going to be a lot more people who get COVID. I've had it. My wife has had it. For us, it was a very minor thing. And there are other people who will get really sick. But you need to learn how to treat it. You need to treat it early. Hydroxychloroquine works in every country in the world except the United States, apparently. Vitamin D works. Zinc works. Erythromycin works. We need to treat it with the treatments we know are here that are cheap and readily available. This is Brad Maskey, and this is the COVID Diaries. I mean, real talk. I'll be back again recording one next weekend, and someday when we get out of these lockdowns, maybe after the new president, if there is a new president, is inaugurated. Oh, wait, Biden said he's going to institute a mask policy for the first 100 days or something, when we all must wear masks all the time, just like Fauci just decided everybody wear a mask all the time. Think of the poor babies that don't get to see the smiling face of their mothers and their family members. I'm sorry, I am a no-masky, and I bring it up and beat that dead horse as often as I can. You've been listening to Real Talk, and you'll hear me again next week on the radio. Thanks for listening. I guess it's not the radio, on my podcast, but thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Real Talk. Real Talk has been a Brad Maskey production.